Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio, your one stop for creative inspiration. We have a terrific hour of ideas and tips for you today, so let's get to it. Here's your host, Pat Sloan.
Welcome to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I am so excited to have you join me for a quilt-filled hour here with American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. First, I have an amazing quilter up that I'm so excited to talk to her. Her name is Annette Kennedy, and she loves to paint on her quilts. This is what I thought was really fascinating. I know people can paint on their quilts, but I don't do that, and I thought it'd be really fun to have Annette come on and tell me about her process and what she does, and, you know, maybe she can give us some tips. So welcome to the show, Annette.
Hi, Pat.
This is so fun to have you here.
Thank you. It's my pleasure to be on the program with you today.
So can you first give me a little backstory, Annette? Because, you know, maybe I don't know this. You know, when did you first make a quilt? You know, what is your kind of quilt story?
Yeah, my grandmother started quilting as far as I was in high school, and she lived 100 miles away, lived on a farm. So I saw her on weekends and quite a bit in the summer. And so she got me started on a quilt, and it was a crib-sized grandmother's flower garden. And being 100 miles away, she wasn't always there every step of the way. So I quilted it with embroidery floss. I left knots on the back. I did hand piece it. And I really thought I would use it for my first child, but as I got old enough to have kids, I realized that it probably was going to fall apart when I washed it. So I never did actually use it, but I still have it.
Oh, you still have it? Oh, that's fantastic. Don't you love that part that you can go back and
I do.
Look at it?
Yes, I do.
So
yes.
Have you always, you know, at some point you started to paint on your quilts? I mean, did you make some more traditional quilts and then all of a sudden decide, you know, I really want to change this up? What happened?
Well, after making that first quilt, I didn't do any more quilting until I had a child. This was in the early 80s. And my mother and grandmother were quilting a lot at this point. And so I was making traditional quilts at that point because that's all I really knew about. And, you know, back then we started piecing in everything by hand. And, you know, I really wanted to get into quilting, but I realized it took an awful lot of time when you were doing things by hand. So anyway, eventually I did start doing things by machine, but still traditional. It was when my husband retired from the military in 2001 and we moved to Colorado that I got exposed to art quilting. And that's when I decided to start working with my photographs. And as soon as I started making pictorial quilts, I wanted to paint on them to increase the details and the visual depth and dimension in the quilts.
You know, I think when you get exposed to the art quilts, it just is a total game changer, don't you think?
Yes, it is. Yeah, anything goes these days in art quilting.
Yeah, I like that part. And, you know, because you don't, it sort of breaks out of that traditional mindset that, you know, a quilt is this. So when you see art quilts, you can go, oh my gosh, I can do all these other things with paint. Describe your quilts because you use your photographs, like you just mentioned, but tell us a little bit about what your quilts look like today.
Okay. They are pictorial. They're landscapes or flowers. I have a few architectural ones, some still lives, and I paint on all of them. And when I'm choosing my fabrics for the quilts, I know that I'm going to be painting on them. So I usually choose fabrics that are lighter in color than they're going to look like finished because of the paint. So I allow for that. But they're all pictorial.
So by pictorial, be like a land. So it looks realistic. To me, they do. They look very realistic.
Yes.
You're not. Yeah. Okay. So you're not altering them to make them sort of, you know, a vision. It's like, no, they're really from your photos. They're just beautiful in that.
Yes.
I really, really love them. just before we go a little deeper into the painting, I had another question, because when we were talking earlier, you, you know, before the show, you had told me that you lived in several countries, including, you know, living outside the U.S. down in our Puerto Rico, so which has a totally different landscape than a lot of places of the U.S. How did that influence you?
Well, when I was in Puerto Rico, we lived there for 4 years because my husband was in the military. And, you know, it is a tropical place, and I had never lived in a tropical place before. So I have lots of photographs and lots of really good memories. You know, we would do snorkeling. I loved the tropical fruits. So I actually have lots and lots of photographs from there and other places that we lived. And I really have not made many quilts from them yet, except for I did do more of a modern-looking oceanscape from the beach that was based on my memories of the beaches there. So eventually I will get back to some of those other locations. I've just mostly been involved with the flowers and the mountains in the area that I am now. And as I've been on this journey of making pictorial quilts, my sense of good composition has increased, and so my photos have improved. So I suspect when I go back to some of my earlier photos from other places that I may find myself maybe redrawing, you know, those images to make better composition pieces.
You know, that makes total sense. You know what you need, Annette, is you need a trip back to Puerto Rico. That would be really good. Then you can take new photos.
I do. Yes. Yes, I do need to do that. I would love to do that.
So let's talk about the paints that you use, because I'm not, I mean, I have painted years ago, as you know, many, many years ago, but I haven't really painted on quilts. What paints are you using?
I'm using Cetacolor, mostly transparent paint. Cetacolor is made by a company named PBO. They're in France. I usually get them from dharmatrading.com. You can get opaque paints that are set of color paints, and you can get the transparents. And I mainly use the transparents because when I paint on a printed fabric on the quilt, the print still shows through. So I can create a painted shadow, and it looks much more realistic because that print is showing through from underneath than if I created it with a different piece of fabric or used an opaque paint, which would cover that print up.
You know, I think that's a huge point, because I think of paints as color, you know, covering it, but yours you can see through, so you see the beautiful fabrics that you picked. Are these, do you have to handle them any way special, these paints?
Well, they're water-based, and they're considered safe, so you can use them with children. I mean, it's a, they will stain your hands if you're handling the paints much. When I'm painting on the quilts, I'm using paint brushes, so I very seldom actually get it on my hands.
Okay. Now, when you're taking a landscape, let's say, Annette, let's just talk a mountain, you know, series of mountains, and people can go to your website, which is your name, AnnetteKennedy.com, and they can see some of your work. How do you get those, the fabric, like the mountain down? You applique it, but tell me what technique you're using.
Well, I'm fusing it, so the edges are raw, and I like Wonder Under. That's the fusible that I used.
All right, so then you paint. Then what's the process? Do you paint next?
Yes, I paint next, and when the painting's finished, then I do the quilting. And sometimes I will paint a little bit after the quilting's done, but it's usually only to make adjustments that maybe the quilting kind of altered. Sometimes because you're getting the texture of quilting that goes down inside the fabric and creates puffiness, you kind of lose some of your shadows if you didn't paint them out far enough. So I may make adjustments after the quilting, but mainly it's done before the quilting.
So then how do you go about, just tell me, you know, like sort of quickly, how do you find the right fabrics to use?
Well, you know, I do have a large collection of fabrics that are grasses and trees and stones and bricks. However, I find that most of the time when I want something like that, what I have in my stash, the scale is too big, the color's wrong. So I've actually quit buying most of those, and I just try to create the look of what I want with mainly modeled batiks. I use some, you know, commercial prints too, but I don't like solid color fabrics because they look too flat to me. The modeled colors have some visual depth already built into them. So it's kind of a challenge trying to find the exact right fabric if you're looking for rocks and stones and trees and bricks and things.
A challenge. And people can take workshops with you. You travel to teach, and you also have an online class at craftsy.com. So tell me about your online class.
Okay. The online class is all about the painting. So I have a printout that you can print out from the online class that tells you the process of how I trace my photographs, make the pattern, cut out the pieces, that thing. But the class actually then starts at the painting process. Mm-hmm. And so I talk about what on your quilt top to paint and how to do it and what end result you're trying to get with the paint. Mm-hmm. And so it's all about, you know, what, how, why to paint on your quilt top.
I think that's great because I think that's the part that a lot of us don't do, at least from my standpoint, you know. Yeah, so that is awesome. And then if they want to contact you about coming to teach at their guild or their quilt shop, do they get hold of you through your website?
Yes. Yeah, there's a contact button. So, yes, they can do that. That's the best way to get a hold of me.
Perfect, perfect, perfect. And one more thing. We're almost done. If you could just tell us what you like to see when you go to a quilt show. What are you drawn to?
Well, I really love the pictorial quilts. However, they're not the only thing I like, but those are always my favorite.
That's great. I mean, I think we all have a favorite. Annette, this has been wonderful. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
So everybody can visit Annette at AnnetteKennedy.com. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. We'll be right back.
Choose from more than 100 of your favorite patterns from American Patchwork and Quilting, Quilts and More, and Quilt Sampler, all available online. Buy downloadable patterns today at apqshop.com.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To store a matching spool and bobbin together, thread both onto a long pipe cleaner and twist the pipe cleaner ends together.
Here's a special offer just for radio listeners. Get 2 full years of American Patchwork and Quilting delivered right to your door for less than half the cost on the newsstand. You won't miss an issue that's packed with never-before-seen projects from top designers, complete materials lists for all projects, and easy-to-use pull-out patterns and quilting diagrams. Subscribe today online, and you'll also get a free downloadable pattern. Check it out.
Follow American Patchwork and Quilting on Pinterest to find ideas for bags, baby projects, pillowcases, storage and organization, and more. Visit Pinterest.com/APQ Magazine to join the fun.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I have been checking out Ellison Lane's website by Jennifer Mathis for a while. She has great tutorials. I love reading sort of her insights into quilting. She has great motivation. And that part just comes through. When she writes, you can tell she really, really loves quilting and sharing. And she's done some super cool things like hosting a big retreat event. So I thought it'd be really fun to have Jennifer come on and talk to us a little bit about quilt making and what she's doing. So welcome to the show, Jennifer.
Hey, thanks for having me. I'm really excited to be here.
Ah, it's always fun. I got to see you like for what, 30 seconds in October? That's
yeah, that was awesome. It was my first market, so it was fun to see you and so fun to meet all these people that I've met online and, you know, have a chance to put an actual conversation to the face. So that was my pleasure.
Yeah, even if it was 30 seconds, it's like, ah, hi, yes, we're going to talk. Okay.
I know it.
So tell me how you discovered quilt making, because you have not been quilting for that many years.
Right. I've only been quilting and sewing really for 3 years. I was pregnant with my second child and was looking to make some things on a budget. I had sewed some onesies, applique, you know, and that was about it. And I came across a tutorial on Amy Smart's Diary of a Quilter, and it was how to make a simple patchwork baby quilt. And so I gave it a shot and loved it. I mean, I was instantly hooked with, you know, the ability to make something that turned out really pretty cute, and I could use it, and I loved it. And so I think that was just the start of I was hooked. I've made what seems like a million quilts since then. It's not anywhere close to that many, but that's really what got me hooked in the first place.
So when you were making that, Amy has a great tutorial and she's been on the show before. It's just awesome. But when you made that, was there a community sort of chatting about making it together? Because I know her tutorial has been out there for a little while. Were you in when she was first releasing it?
No, I hadn't. I just came across it. You know, I think I was looking at on Etsy for different baby things and for my nursery. And at the time, I thought I came across some quilts, and I thought, well, I bet I have some fabric. Maybe I could do that. And I searched online. And that is really the way that I learned to sew. I'm completely self-taught on the internet. Even though my mom and family, my grandmothers, they sewed, but I was never interested in it at the time. So all of my interest in things and all that I have learned have been from tutorials online and really lots of Google searches. So
I've taken
a class here and there since then, but not very many. So I've been very thankful for all of the information out there.
I mean, I always find it quite fun when I go out and give my talk to groups. You know, I'll say, you know, where did you learn? And there's always that group now that's coming up where I learned on the internet. And I just think it's so much fun. Why did you decide to start writing your own site, your own blog? You know, what motivated you?
Sure. Well, I think after I'd been reading all these for about 6 months after I started learning how to quilt and sew, I had been reading all these blogs and following and seeing their tutorials, and I just wanted in on the conversation. I found I was so passionate about it that I really wanted to share what I had to say. And I thought, well, you know, all these people can do it. I bet I can too. So I kind of jumped in with both feet. I was in an online bee at the time, and they kind of motivated me and promised to read. So I started out with at least five or six people that were interested. And from there, it just kind of grew. I have found that the online community has been a really great way for me to stay connected to people who feel passionate about it like I do. And for a stay-at-home mom who doesn't have any friends that in town that sew, and I have since then that's changed somewhat, and I've taught several people how to sew here because I love it so much. Roping them in under duress.
Right.
But but it's been a great way for me to make some friends that feel as passionate about it as I do. And with all the technology and Instagram and Facebook and all of the blogs, I feel like I really have made these great connections with people that love it as much as I do.
So when you took your blog and you started writing, and now you have tutorials, and it's a business site for you. But tell me a little bit about the types of things that you are putting out there, and how often are you writing them? That kind of a thing.
Sure. Well, I tend to like to do my tutorials and things in series, and lately I've had a couple of guest tutorial series. I've got one going on right now with holiday hostess things. I probably post 3 to 4 times a week, but when I have a series, it tends to be more than that. I think I have utilized the internet so much for tutorials and to find information on how to make things, but I think it's fun to give that back, and I think everybody likes being able to find information on the spur of the moment, you know, or to utilize Pinterest to its best qualities and really have lots of things to make at your fingertips when the mood strikes. So I think my background is teaching, and I was an elementary school teacher, so writing mm-hmm. tutorials and sharing what I know comes really naturally.
Mm-hmm. Well, that makes a lot of sense then. If you are, you know, if you come from a teaching background, I think teachers generally, you know, wherever you go, that's always part of you because that's what mm-hmm. you love
yes.
to do. You love paper piecing. So
I do love paper piecing. It seemed so elusive when I first started quilting, and I would see all those, like that Ringo Pie Bee that was out there and mm-hmm. all those amazing mm-hmm. things that Ayumi Mills from Pink Penguin makes, and I thought that was so, it looked so hard and just impossible, but then I figured out it's really not. It's really very achievable, and I love it. And I'm also kind of a lazy quilter. I don't like to cut lots of precision pieces and templates and stuff like that. So I think paper piecing solves that problem for me. I can use my scraps and I can not have to measure exactly and kind of mm-hmm. just wing it on, you know, pieces. As long as it covers the space, then you're good. And you can make some amazing things that I don't think I would not be able to achieve without paper piecing.
So do you have a couple of tips? I mean, do you have like a favorite one that people could try if they've not done a lot of paper piecing or, you know, what you do some
Definitely.
Videos, you know, what do you have out there?
I do. Yeah, I do have a video. I love doing video tutorials. I think that is right along my wheelhouse with teaching too. And I hope to do some more of those in the future. I do have a beginner's tutorial for paper piecing. My okay. favorite tips I would say is the first one, don't be afraid of it. It's really not scary. You're just sewing through paper. And if you can sew on a straight line, then you're all good. You don't need fancy paper. I sew, I print my templates on cheapo recycled copy paper from Walmart. So it's really user-friendly. Like you can, I know there's fancy paper, piecing paper out there, but if, you know, I don't want people to get hung up on not trying it because they're afraid they don't have the tools. All you really need is a printer and some thread and a ruler. So I use an add a quarter ruler. That is really one of my favorite tools for paper piecing.
Okay.
It adds the quarter inch seam for you that mm-hmm. butts right up against the paper when you fold it. And I explain mm-hmm. this in my video tutorial. You can see what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. I think that's the biggest key in paper piecing is to be able to see it. Because once you see what mm-hmm. you're doing, it's really easy to understand the whole flip it and sew it through the paper. Otherwise, mm-hmm. you kind of hear it, and it sounds like, blah, 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 what? And yeah. just, it's really not as hard as people think.
Yeah, I think the biggest mistake that a lot of us make is, you know, not making your fabric piece big enough or trying to visualize when you flip it,
totally.
You know, where it's going to be. So, mm-hmm. so of course, you don't cover the shape. You know, ultimately, that's what the problem is.
Yes.
And then it's really no fun to rip.
Totally.
Through paper. I mean, it's no fun to rip, period, but when you've
no.
got paper involved. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's the biggest key is to make sure your fabric piece that you're using covers your whole section that you're trying to cover when you hold it up. So I recommend, you know, flipping it over, holding it up to a light or a window so you can see, mm-hmm. and then sewing it through because you really don't want to unpick those tiny
no.
stitches. That's no fun.
And
no.
do you reduce your
we
stitch
all know that,
size?
But it,
do
I do.
Take your
I stitch,
stitch size
with
down?
A 1.5.
A 1.5, okay.
Mm-hmm, to 1.5, I do. And okay. then when I'm sewing my sections together, I increase it to 2.0.
Okay.
But that's, and then I also say not to tear away your papers until your whole block is complete. So mm-hmm. that will help you line up your, you know, if you have several sections that make up one 12-inch block or however you're piecing it, to keep those papers okay. on until the end. That's what I've found works best. And a little dab of glue stick over the number one when you get started will hold your first piece in place.
I like that.
And you can
I
use,
like
you
that
know,
one.
Elmer's glue. Cool glue.
Yeah.
My kids also, I'm always looking for glue sticks in our house because my kids love them so much and we use them all the time. I'll usually try to hang on to one left in my sewing room, but eventually it goes towards the crafts, which is good, but I have to buy them in the bulk. but it's a good trick.
So I want to give your website, Jennifer, your website is Ellison Lane, E-L-L-I-S-O-N, Lane, you know, one word, .com. And that's where people can go to see your retreat. You're running it again this year or this coming year?
I am, yes. So South, you can get to it from Ellison Lane. You can also get to it at SEW South, SOUTH.com. It's it's a boutique retreat that is in Charlotte. That's our second year. We have 50 people coming, and there's a lot of buzz and excitement because it's a really fun 3-day get together in one room, make four things, kind of have a great time, sew together, encourage each other. You know, last year, we made these duffel bags, and everybody worked on it throughout the whole weekend, and we would literally stand up and cheer for each person when they finished it, no matter the whole room. It was just such a fun, enthusiastic, yay, you did it kind of a thing. So I think that's what's been so appealing about it, is getting to sew with people that share your passion and want to get together and take some time to do something for themselves and just have fun and make things.
Yeah, I like the concept that it's one big room rather than little classrooms. That's so neat. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, well, you know, it is a lot of fun. There's a lot of chatter with 50 sewing machines and 50 usually all women so far. And but it's just really, it's fun. It's encouraging and inspiring, and it lets everybody support each other and cheer each other on. And, you know, there's like 50 experts around you, even if everybody of all different levels, and, you know,
well,
it's
Jennifer,
great.
This has been so great. I appreciate you being on.
Your sewing skills from start to finish.
Thanks for having me.
Tips from the universe of American Patchwork and Quilting. Visit tips.allpeoplequilt.com for inspiration. Quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. Set yourself up to stitch a little every day. When you finish stitching, before putting everything away, rethread your needle and take the first stitch. Then the next time you pull out your project, you'll be ready to sit down and start stitching. Make the most of your sewing machine by watching Machine Minute videos brought to you by Baby Lock. Learn about popular topics like tension troubles, stitch length, needles, buttonholes, zipper basics, and more. Watch these videos at allpeoplequilt.com/videos.
Take an ultimate shop hop tour of 11 top quilt shops. You'll find them all in the current issue of Quilt Sampler, available now at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. I hope you enjoyed those first two guests. That was so much fun. A just totally, totally different spectrum of quilters. That's the best part about all of this. The next up for the second half of the show, we're going to be talking with Elizabeth Daxson, and her website is called Don't Call Me Betsy. And under her photo at her website, you know, her personal photo, it says, I'm a mom to a busy 5-year-old and I sew for my sanity. Let's get to quilting, shall we? And I think that really, you know, just makes me giggle because I'm like, yes, let's all just get to quilting. So I'm really excited. Elizabeth's a new author. She has a book out, and we're going to talk about that and all kinds of fun things that she's doing. So welcome, Elizabeth. I'm so glad you're here.
Oh, thanks, Pat. I'm so glad to be here.
I want to give your website again, just so in case people want to pull it up while we're talking. Don't Call Me Betsy, allonewordcom. So first of all, tell us why that name, because I've been curious forever to know why you call it that.
Oh, well, I hope it's a good story then. My name is Elizabeth, and my mother, as a child, decided that I was a Betsy. My sister lobbied to call me Beth, but my mother insisted I was a Betsy. And my first grade teacher did not happen to share that opinion. She actually did not think I looked like a Betsy and managed to tell me I was 6, so I was very impressionable. And ever since then, I have fought against being called that. To this day, only my family is permitted to call me Betsy, so it's just something I have to say a lot. So that's where the blog name came from.
Oh, that cracks me up. I think there's everybody in our family somewhere that has that, that's happened. Mine is my mother-in-law, so she has a family name that only the, you know, her like parents and cousins call her, nobody else. That's like, so tell me, how did you discover quilt making?
I discovered quilt making kind of on a whim. I had been a stay-at-home mother for a couple of years, and prior to that, I was a serious workaholic. So being a stay-at-home mom was a really big gear change for me that was really kind of a challenge. And I got to the point where I felt like I just needed something more. I felt like maybe I needed a hobby. So I wandered into my local Joann's on a Sunday morning and walked out with a sewing machine. No idea how to use it. No idea what I was going to make. I was just going to make something. And I happened to first start checking out books in the library about sewing. Then I found blogs, and I made my first quilt, and the rest, you could say, is history. I've been addicted ever since.
So yes, I just love that you just took home a sewing machine. It's like, okay, here's my hobby. Do you still have that machine?
Yes.
I'm hoping you upgraded by now.
I think I'm on my third upgrade from that one.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. What do you sew on now? What kind of machine are you sewing on?
These days I sew on a semi-industrial Juki machine, a TL98Q. It's a great machine. It's very much kind of like a hypercharged featherweight. It's only a straight stitch, but it's perfect for quilting.
You know, I think they're becoming more popular. Have you noticed that, Elizabeth, that it seems like more and more people are wanting that? They're faster than a regular machine, right?
Oh, yes, by a landslide. Now, it does kind of sound a whole lot like a landslide. They tend to be noisier machines, but they're so, so durable and so easy to care for.
So what do you do about, okay, I'm going to like morph onto this conversation about the machine, because I've been, you know, I haven't had anybody talk about these sort of semi-industrial machines. Do they have like a quarter inch foot that you buy, or are they quilter friendly?
Oh yeah, definitely. There are several different free motion quilting feet. There's walking feet available. There are quarter inch feet, both with guides and without, available. Really kind of anything you could think of that a quilter would want in a machine. You really have all that. Plus, you don't have the computer, which is often what tends to go wrong with computerized machines, which is nice.
Okay, so it's real, like you said, it's like a supercharged featherweight, and people like their featherweights, but you can't really travel with them, right? They're too heavy.
It's a bit on the heavy side. You could travel with it. It does have a handle, but I think it weighs a good 50 pounds.
Yeah, yeah. I've never seen anybody bring one to class yet, so. So tell me what style of quilts you're making since you made your very first one. What have you sort of gravitated towards?
I think these days I'm gravitated mostly toward modern quilts, especially modern quilts that have some traditional flavoring, whether it's inspiration from a traditional block. I really enjoy quilts that kind of straddle the line between modern and traditional.
So what are you working on right now? What do you have going on?
Right now, I think I managed to cut out a project this morning that I didn't get to get started on yet, but I'm going to make a wreath for my door for the fall. I haven't gotten a fall wreath up yet, and it's already November, so I'm about to miss the chance. So I'm working on that. And then other than that, just a couple of swap projects, a couple of little mini quilts and pillows for some friends.
Okay, so let's talk about online community a bit, because that's, I think, similar to Jennifer that was just on. Those of us who sort of start with a lot of internet work build community and find, you know, like-minded people. What's the internet mean to you personally as a quilter?
Personally, as a quilter, I think the internet is where a lot of my friends are. I like to say that I found my tribe on the internet. I found people that share a lot of the same passions that I do, that are in a similar place in their life. A lot of times being a stay-at-home mom can be a very solitary type of thing to be. And with the internet and with online swaps and social media, you get the opportunity to really feel like you're part of something, even if it's not something physically right where you're at, which is really nice. I've made lots of lifelong friends through the internet, through social media and through blogs. And it's really a wonderful thing, I think.
Yeah, I'm right with you. You know, even though I have, do you have a community with, you know, like that you can go sit and touch your friends and sit in the same room with them? Do you have quilters that you can do that with?
I do have some locally. I started the chapter of the Modern Quilt Guild here in my area, so I do have some local friends that quilt now as well, but definitely more online friends, I'd say, than mm-hmm. than local folks.
Yeah, and you know, do you find, Elizabeth, this is what I like, is that they're there like all the time. Like you can find somebody
yes.
to talk to if you want
Absolutely.
To.
Absolutely. Even yeah. 1 a.m., you can't sleep, you have insomnia and you want to sew something. My friends are somewhere, are probably still up, whether it's, you know, my across the pond friends or the California
right.
friends. Somebody.
Yeah. That is what I find exciting, is that you could just go on to, you know, what is the medium that you sort of are focused on now? Because, you know, some of us try to be everywhere a little bit because of our business, but do you have one place where you mm-hmm. hang out more?
I would say that I'm probably mostly found on Instagram. It's the thing that I tend to come back to more frequently than the other venues.
Mm-hmm.
It's so instant and it's pretty because it's so visual at the same time. But at the same time, you know, when you look at photos that quilters are posting, they've got a ton of comments. There's a lot of dialogue going on. Even though it's really a visual medium, there's still lots of conversation happening there.
I have gotten real hooked on it in the past year. It's, you know, you have to have the right kind of phone, you know, so if you haven't sort of upgraded
yeah.
to a phone that allows you to use, you know, to take pictures and send them, it's well worth it just for Instagram. That's
Absolutely. I agree wholeheartedly.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy, but it is so much fun. Now tell me what people will find on your site. We're going to talk about your book in the next half, but tell me a little bit about what goes on your website.
Sure. On my website, it's primarily a blog, but on my blog, I kind of run the gamut in terms of lots of different things that I cover. On my blog, I talk about what I'm making. If it's going well, I talk about what's going well about it. If it's not going so well, then I try to be real open and honest about what's not going well, what's not coming easily. I also mm-hmm. share tutorials and patterns. I have a Block of the Month Club, I think, that we're going to talk about in the next segment as well, that is primarily run through my blog. And I also talk about things that my friends are up to, talking again about that community, people that I've met and those that are near and far that I like to promote and share what they're up to as well.
Yeah, I love your tutorials. They are just so wonderful. You have a tab for them. What is the one that you find most people sort of, you know, are directed to, or, you know, sort of catches their attention?
For the longest time, my most popular tutorial was a mini quilt that I made in a swap a couple of years ago, a swap that I don't think is still running, but the quilt that I made sure has outlived it. It's a bookshelf mm-hmm. mini quilt where you need some scraps, very mm-hmm. easy to find scraps to create a bookshelf quilt and add some selvages to create your book titles.
Cute, cute, cute. On your free pattern or your tutorial page, or you call it free pattern page, whatever, they're more tutorials. You have a couple
yeah.
of free motion quilting tutorials. And I thought we could
yes.
talk a little bit about free motion quilting because I love your philosophy about it. Tell me first a little bit about how you feel about free motion quilting your own pieces.
Sure, I love free motion quilting. It was one of the parts of the quilting process that I fell in love with first. I loved fabric, the shopping was fun, but then when I free motioned my first quilt, I really had that aha kind of moment, that light bulb moment. And even though my first few attempts were not the prettiest in the world, I kept on trying, I kept on practicing, and it got better with each quilt. It got to the point where I wanted to make a bunch of quilt tops so I could practice quilting them all in quick succession and really build my skills. I love teaching free motion quilting, and one of the things that I say in my classes is that anyone can free motion quilt. Any kind of machine, I don't care what it is. It's your great grandmother's sewing machine, you can free motion quilt on it. It just takes practice and giving yourself permission to try, permission not to be perfect on the first try. It's okay.
Mm-hmm.
My first quilt that I free motion looks like there's creepy fingers on it. It's not the most beautiful thing in the world, but you have to get over that and keep trying. it's so important to just remember that you're never going to be this close to those stitches again. Probably never, ever.
Right. And wash the quilt, because that helps.
Yes, it sure does. That the crinkle can hide just about any bad stitch.
Right. And it does. The practice part is critical. Let's talk before the break. We have like maybe a minute and a half. I am totally in love with Baptist fans, and you have a tutorial on them. You know, by doing them free motion. You know, I usually try to con my friend Cindy and her husband Dennis into doing them for me. But I might try yours because it looks. Yeah, I know it looks. I'm like, Joe, Cindy, Dennis, can you do more Baptist fans? What tips do you have? You have a tutorial, which is beautiful, but walk me through it.
I do. It's a very simple tutorial. It was kind of an accident the way that tutorial came together, though. I had a circle cut ruler for a project that I had intended to make that I never actually got around to, and so I was trying to think of a way to use that ruler. And so I thought, oh, well, it looks kind of like rainbows, and then I was carrying on with that theme, and I thought, fans. Oh, Baptist fans. So I took a handy-dandy fabric marker and started using the circle cut ruler to trace that particular pattern onto one of my quilt tops. I did about half of what the actual circle cut ruler shows, because it's an actual half circle. So I did about a quarter circle, traced them, and then started stitching, and it was a lot easier than I thought it would be.
And you're marking it with what? What tool?
For that particular tutorial, what I used was a water-soluble fabric marker. The one that I used, I believe, was made by Dritz. And one of the challenges I found is that you've got to make sure to find one that fits in those grooves of the ruler. Some of the markers are a bit thicker than others, so it needs to be one that's got a fine tip to it.
Yeah, I think that's a big key, because I've had that problem on some other types of rulers that have grooves for marking, is that a lot of pens don't fit in there. You've got great arrows which show how to backtrack, and you have it on a it's just wonderful, Elizabeth. I'm going to try it, I promise. Cindy and Dennis,
so that's wonderful.
We're gonna take a break, okay? And
great.
When we come back, we're going to talk about your block of the month is coming up, and we're going to talk about your book, Becoming a Confident Quilter, which I'm so excited to hear more about. So we'll be right back.
Looking for fresh, simple, and fun projects and ideas? Check out the current issue of Quilts & More magazine at your local quilt shop or on newsstands.
This quilting tip brought to you by Moda Fabrics. Visit modafabrics.com or your local quilt shop to see the latest fabric collections. To maintain consistency when piecing, keep your eye on the spot where the needle enters the fabric, not the needle going up and down.
Hi, I'm Jennifer Keltner, Executive Editor of American Patchwork and Quilting, and I'd like to invite you to join me in making a pillowcase and making a difference. It's easy. Make and donate pillowcases in your local community. Use your favorite pattern or choose from one of the free patterns at allpeoplequilt.com. Whether you sew pillowcases with a group or by yourself, you can help someone less fortunate. You could donate them to a women's shelter, boys or girls club, homeless shelter, veterans home, or any other organization you know of in need. Once you donate the pillowcases, log on to allpeoplequilt.com. Click on the box in the upper right-hand corner for the 1 million pillowcase challenge and enter the number of pillowcases you created to our national tally. We know quilting changes everything, and we're out to show the world just how much quilters care. Please join the American Patchwork and Quilting 1 million pillowcase challenge. We're counting on you.
See what other quilters are up to on the American Patchwork and Quilting page on Facebook. Simply go to Facebook.com and search for APQ Magazine.
Welcome back to American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan, and I'm here with Elizabeth Daxson of the website Don't Call Me Betsy, and she's a new author. Let's talk about your book, Elizabeth. Yay!
Oh, thank you.
I get very excited. So tell me, why did you decide to write a book? What was your motivation?
Well, like I said, I learned quilt from books and from blogs, and I found that in reading books at the library, there wasn't really one book that I felt like I could use and sew through and grow as a quilter. There wasn't like a workbook style of book, and being a very visual learner, I really like books. I love blogs, don't get me wrong, but I love something I can hold in my hand. So I really wanted to create something that someone could pick up and sew through and find themselves feeling like a real quilter by the end of the book, something that would teach technique, some design basics, different piecing techniques, and that's really where the book was born from.
Ah, so you take them through the basics, because so are you assuming when people that your audience doesn't quilt at all and move forward with complexity?
Not necessarily never quilted before. I definitely could see people who have maybe made a couple of quilts picking up the book. But yes, somebody who's never quilted before could pick up the book and move through the book. The quilts do progress with the level of challenges throughout, with the piecing and with the techniques that are covered. It does get progressively more challenging as you move through the book. But the intent is really that anybody can quilt.
And I love that, you know, one of the first projects is basically squares and rectangles, which is very forgiving for someone just learning or who hasn't done very much or hasn't done it in a while. What's your favorite part in the book, your personal favorite part that you're like so excited that you got it in the book?
I think the thing that I was most excited to get in the book is the last pattern that's in the book. It's a foundation paper pieced pattern called Wham, which is named kind of tongue-in-cheek for my sister. I remember as a little girl, I would sneak into her room. She's 10 years older than me, so I idolized her as a kid. She'd go out with her friends in high school, and I'd be in kindergarten. I'd go into her room and turn on her records or her tapes and sing to her posters. And her my favorite poster of hers to sing to was her Wham poster. So this quilt was named kind of for her. But the quilt, enough about
that's fun.
The quilt foundation paper piece, which is one of my current obsessions in quilting, and I love the fabrics that are in the quilt. It is the second run of Denise Schmidt's Flea Market Fancy collection. Love the colors, love the block, so it's just one of my favorites.
And I like the story. Do you tell the story in there too? Do you rat out your sister that
I'm not sure I did tell the story now that you say that.
Ah, so now everybody knows it. So that's good because they listen to us here. That's So you like foundation work. Tell me, what do you feel people can do to sort of take it to the next level for themselves if they've maybe done a little bit? But, you know, what do they need to sort of focus on, or what problems have you seen people that you can help with?
Sure. When I teach foundation paper piecing, I find a lot of times that people just get intimidated by the technique. I know the first time I foundation paper pieced, I did. I let my head kind of take over and psyched myself out a good bit. I would get frustrated by making a mistake, and I'd throw the block across the room. So one of the things that I talk about when I teach foundation paper piecing is taking it slow. It's a lot like learning to drive on the opposite side of the road. It feels really wrong at first, but you have to get over that hump to actually get to make it beautiful. I think that one of the keys for paper piecing is to remember that there's only one piece of fabric that you're going to place right side out on your unprinted side of the paper, and that's the very first piece. Every subsequent piece of fabric should be placed right down with that unprinted side of the paper. Because I know that was something I was really, really terrible at when I first started paper piecing. I'd put the fabric the wrong way and then have to rip it apart. And unripping paper piecing is very frustrating with that short stitch length you work with. Gosh.
Yeah, it's true. I think, do you find if people make a few, like, sort of quickly, like, you know, they don't, like, have big gaps of time, do you find that it builds the confidence?
Oh, definitely. Definitely. If you start with something really simple that just requires a couple of seams and you do a couple of those template pieces over and over again, it definitely does build the confidence. You get the hang of it and it starts to make sense so that you can tackle something more complicated.
Yeah. I have another question, and you have this in your book because you give all the parts of quilt making in your book. You know, we talked about free motion quilting earlier. And so in your book, you have a section on marking tools and basting tools. What is your preferred method for basting?
Funny that you should ask, because I feel like I talk about this a lot with people. I prefer spray basting. It's still part of me that's lazy. I am often a lazy quilter. I like shortcuts. And spray basting feels like a big, fat shortcut. You don't have to crawl around on the floor on your hands and knees and pin through three layers. I think it's so much faster and so much easier. It does sometimes require an extra pair of hands. If I'm working on something big, I enlist my husband to help me, you know, peel things back. But for the most part, it's a lot easier to handle than pin basting.
Now, when you spray baste, do you put it up on the design wall and spray baste it there? I mean, I've seen people do that, or do you have it on a tabletop?
I typically work on the floor because I don't really have a table quite large enough, I think, really, to do what I'd like to do with it.
Okay.
Typically what I do is I lay out my backing first and then lay out my batting first and layer my backing on top of that, spray baste that, then flip that whole bad boy over and lay my quilt top on top and baste that section.
Okay, so how about overspray? Do you find it to actually be a problem or not?
It depends. I think that when I first started spray basting, overspray was definitely an issue. I not only oversprayed frequently, but I also used way more bad basting spray than I actually needed to. Now that I've been doing it for a while, I'm a little bit better about it. I'm a little bit more, I'd say, tentative about my spray. I don't necessarily hold it down and spray it real hard and long, but with overspray, there is a product that the 505 people make, an oops spray, if you will, to remove any overspray that causes any issue.
Oh, well, that's good
really,
to know.
Really handy to have.
Yeah, because occasionally it does happen. So you don't, it's nice. It's like the stuff for the goop for the iron, you know, to clean the stuff off the iron. Well, your book, I just want to tell people the title again, Becoming a Confident Quilter by Elizabeth Jackson. So you have something else going on, your block of the month that you've been doing. It's a club. Tell me about it.
Last December, I had a dream one night about making a bunch of paper piece stars and doing a block of the month club with it. At first I thought, oh gosh, that would be so much work. No one would want to do that with me. Everyone thinks paper piecing is too hard. But I tossed the idea out on my blog and I was shocked at the kind of feedback that I got. People were really excited about the idea. So I decided, okay, well, I'll give it a try. So I've done that for the past 11 months. It's the Stars Block of the Month Club, started back in January. Actually, technically, it started in December. I gave a bonus blackout for subscribers in December. And I just finished up the last block in the last few weeks and thought, oh, I'm going to miss this. So I decided to do another round. So for 2014, 12 more blocks. So a total of 24 blocks. And one of the cool things is I give two different sizes of the block templates each month, a 6-inch block and a 12-inch block. So you don't have to make a humongous quilt out of these stars. You can make a small pouch out of a 6-inch star. You could make a coaster. They're really handy blocks to have for lots of different types of piecing projects, not just for quilts.
Oh, that's pretty neat. I like that you give it in two sizes, because I'm finding a lot of people don't have space to put up a bigger quilt, but they still want to make a quilt, so they're wanting to make smaller things. So that's really a great option. And you have a drawing. It's just spectacular, your 2014. Just really, really spectacular. It might even entice me. I'm not sure, but it's pretty, it's really, really nice, Elizabeth. So they can go to your website. Now, do you have... I'm sorry, I'm talking over you. Do you have a folder where people can see the blocks that everybody was making?
Yes, on Flickr, there's a Flickr group called Stitching with Don't Call Me Betsy, and that's where the subscribers for 2013 have been posting their blocks. And usually each month I try to put together a little mosaic of the blocks that I've seen for the previous month. which is a lot of fun, and I try to post that to my blog as well.
Okay, perfect, perfect. Well, everybody can go to your site and look under Lucky Stars BOM, and it's just, yes. I can't wait to see. I'm going to have to be following along because it looks really spectacular. One more thing before we go. I'm just jumping all over here, Elizabeth. I wanted you to share with us, you do projects for the Moda Bake Shop, who is a great friend to the American Patchwork and Quilting radio show. And I like the one that you have out there called the Mod 9 Patch Quilt. Tell me about it.
Oh, that's a fun quilt. That is a really super simple 9-patch quilt to make, but instead of sticking with just squares, we throw in a half-square triangle in the four corner units of the block. It creates a really fun secondary repeat when you put blocks together, and it's a great way to use up some coordinating solids with your favorite Moda prints.
You know, I was looking at it, and the full quilt, it really looks much more complicated. Have people said that to you? It's just really well done.
Oh, thank you. I have heard that. It, in part because of that secondary repeat, it makes it look like it's a two-block quilt or that it has a little bit more complexity to it than it really does. But it's a very simple quilt to put together, very quick, too.
Now, do you think that part of the look, I mean, your fabric selection has a lot to do with things, but you also used the solids and the prints in there. Do you think that might be why it sort of makes your eye go to some of the, looking like it's two blocks?
I think so. I think the use of solids in those half-square triangle units in the corners, when it creates the diamond shape as the blocks come together, I think that's really what gives it that two-block look and feel. But at the same time, I think that that really makes the prints shine even more.
Mm-hmm. I agree, and I love the stripe. You have a stripe in there that, I mean, that
me
just, like, ooh,
yeah.
Stripes. I love stripes. I love stripes. So, okay, one last fun question, Elizabeth. When you go to a quilt show, what kind of quilts are you drawn to look at?
The ones that are bright and bold. I love bright colors. Can't get enough of them.
So when you were just in Houston, were you able to see the quilt show part? I know it's really busy when we're at the trade show.
Yes, it is really busy when you're at the trade show. I did walk over to where the quilts were displayed for a little bit, and I did get to see some really beautiful ones as well.
Yeah, it's overwhelming to be able to try to do both of those things because there are hundreds, like, you know, like 500 quilts or something in there. Okay, so the big bold quilts are all for you. Thanks for being here, Elizabeth. This has been great.
Thanks so much for having me.
So everybody can visit Elizabeth at don'tcallmebetsy.com. This is American Patchwork and Quilting Radio. I'm your host, Pat Sloan. We'll see you next week.
Remember to visit allpeoplequilt.com for more information on topics from today's show, as well as how-to videos, free printable patterns, and additional tips and techniques.